recorded.
Okay. Yakir graciously agreed to start us off just by summarizing the important parts of the Chumash HaDeshen discussion. So let me share my screen so we have it. After Yakir gives us his summary, we're going to move into the stira between the sugya in Gittin and the sugya in Bava Metzia. All right, Yakir, the floor is yours. You're saying that in this last case, the Chumash HaDeshen tells us that if the ones is clearly the result or adheres in the poel, then, so for example, the case where his wife gets sick, then even if there's prepayment, the poel will have to swallow the loss because hareha ikav nishar bo, balabayis lo nisratzet le'im ken shelo yishar bo. So when the loss is so clearly stemming from the poel, or resulting from the poel, the prevention comes from the poel side, then even if there's prepayment, the poel will have to give it back, and it's the poel's loss to bear. That's the first principle, right, Yakir?
Right.
Okay, good. What else do you have for us?
And then for the other onsen, the guiding rule is the question of knowledge. Who would have had more foreknowledge and therefore more than responsibility to make a tenai about it. So if the Baal HaBayis would have had if the Baal HaBayis had more foreknowledge about the onus, he should have made the tenai, and therefore if he doesn't, he'll suffer the loss. If they're equal, he invokes a Masu Echal of Haraya as justification for the fact that the poel should have been the one to make the Tanai.
Excellent. So he applies the Motu Mechabral of Haraya rule, he applies the superior knowledge rule. And
yeah.
Yakir, tell us a little bit about how he applies the Motu Mechabral of Haraya rule in conjunction with this prepayment, payment in the middle.
Right. So he goes back and forth a little bit about that. In his first pass, he says that because the Moshe Rabbeinu Haraya rule is just a way of getting at who should have made the tenai to begin with. If there was advance payment in a middle stage, that doesn't change who should have made the stipulation. So the poel will still lose out.
Very good. But then
it sounds like there's advance payments at the time of the contract that does change it. So that would otherwise have make stipulation. And then he goes back and says that that maybe even payment in the middle is an acceptance of risk on the part of the Baal HaBayis, and so that will go through.
Good, right? I mean, he says, he goes back and forth in this, but then he ends up saying, since he made payment. In the middle, kiven dinasan lo scharo nisratzelo sheyishlo afilu yerabones, right? There's some sort of acceptance of risk, and therefore interim payment is considered to be the Baal HaBayis waiving his right to the compensation. The Baal HaBayis embracing the risk. Very good. And then he mentioned one more thing. Do you remember this discussion here? The difficult discussion about whether the Balabais hired the Poel to go to a specific vineyard versus going to the general, any vineyard in the suburbs. Do you remember that discussion?
Yeah, I looked that over again. I think I might disagree with your take on it. But at least what he says is that he says there's a difference between hiring for a specific place or hiring bestam to a general place, and in the case where he hires for a specific place, then the rule of Mosio Chalavraya applies. If it's a general hire, then the Poel has the claim miyomer de la sosia in mikafriz es kartani, and therefore the Poel does not the Poel is not going to lose out. So I think your take was see if I understand it exactly.
Okay, one second. Before you give my take, we're in agreement on just the facts, right? We're in agreement in the direction, right? I know there was some discussion with Adam and Ben last time about this. So you're in agreement with my reading of the Shumas HaDeshen, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So now you want to give... it looks like you're going to propose two theories to explain why when the Poel is hired specifically to harvest wine from this vineyard, it's the Poel's loss because of a Motzmei Chaver El Varaya. And when he's hired Stam to gather wine from local vineyards, then it's the Balabais's loss to bear, right? So you could explain that. Let's hear.
I think your take was that if I understood it correctly, if it's a specific vineyard and then that becomes impossible, then the contract is totally impossible to carry out. But if it's not a specific vineyard, then the contract is not totally impossible to carry out. So the obligations involved aren't totally discharged.
Yeah. To flesh that out a little bit more, Yakir, the idea is that if I hire you to harvest wine from Vineyard X and Vineyard X is no longer harvestable, then that means that the contract performance is impossible. And, you know, we are both in equal position here. So Amos Mechaber Alavaraya, so the Poel bears the loss, right? So, I mean, the duty was on you to have made some stipulation about it. If, however, I hired you, Stam, to harvest wine from any vineyard in the Philadelphia suburbs, assuming that's not the empty set, then if it's impossible for you to harvest wine from Vineyard X, well, the contract is still open, right? Meaning you still could perform in some way, in which case an inability, if there are no... an inability to continue, or the fact that I'm not pushing you to continue harvesting wine, is my loss to bear. The ikuv is from me, the ikuv is not from you, right? And that's what I think he's getting at with this analogy to the Sfina Stam V'yayin Zeh, that the inability here to perform is stemming from the Balabais in that case, not from the Poel. Is that what you're... So, yeah, okay, let me hear your way of fleshing this out.
So, I'm not sure this isn't just another application of the superior knowledge principle. Meaning that take the analogy to Lo Sayer L'Arami or some... more seriously, I think, than we have been. Just as in that case, at least a dominant explanation of that case is that if the Poland don't know the specifics of the field beforehand, they have inferior knowledge, and therefore it's the Balabais' responsibility to stipulate. So same thing here. If the if the Poel doesn't know the specific vineyard where he's going, he has inferior knowledge to Reuven, the wine merchant who always gets his wine from these from this area.
That's interesting. So you want to read this in terms of superior knowledge principle? I see why you might want to say that. I would just say two things in response. First of all, nothing in the language here suggests that he's going in for the... I get it. If that's what's going on in the Sire La'ara Midorsa Sigya, then I see where you're coming from. But nothing in the language here suggests that he's appealing to the superior knowledge principle here. Moreover, when he cites the Sire La'ara Sugya, he cites Rashi as saying that the Poelim could basically argue that you hired us for any task, not necessarily for this task, in which case, like, you have an obligation to provide us with other labor, which I think is what comes out of that Rashi, which the Chumash Hadeshin
says. That's one read of Rashi.
Right.
You could also read that Rashi as going on a superior knowledge principle, that Shimon doesn't know Miyomar. Shimon had no idea.
Right.
So just in Rashi, Matsi Miyomar, Miyomar, Dead Night to Hayaga, we didn't know that was the land, and therefore we lack knowledge, and therefore...
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's an interesting way of reading Rashi, and that would certainly bring Rashi's own Shita into more consistent, internal interpretation. But also, by Yakir, I would push back with the third point, and that is... the fact that he points to the sugi about Svina, which we will look at, where the Svina case seems to rely on a principle of who's the cause of the non-performance. And so here the argument is Havli Yenchav Anoa Kaima Tanai, meaning the Poel can say, let me, just give point. I'll keep going to other vineyards and I'll finish the contract right now. You, Mr. Balabais, are the one now who's saying that you don't need any more wine, but I'm perfectly happy to continue working for you. And so you're considered to be the chozer, not me.
Right. I would read that as I'd prefer to read his invoking Sfina Nyayan as a completely separate point, meaning put in a new paragraph before Vilamati Nami Lamemar.
Interesting. I mean, over here, or something like that.
One line down from there.
Yeah, a little before.
Period.
It's like a separate. Vilamati Nami Lamemar Havli Yaincha. So there's like a separate consideration that he's forfending against. Got the idea?
Yeah.
That's a really interesting read. Okay, good. So we have two possible readings of how to make sense of that distinction. Anybody have thoughts on Yakir's reading of the Yayin Mikfari Zeh versus the general formulation in the Chumash Hadeshin? The Zult.
Yeah, I think your read fits better, the language. I mean, I think Yakir is more consistent with the overall presentation, but doesn't work so well like in that particular paragraph. But just a question on your reading, Itamar.
Yeah.
Why should the Baal Bayit pay for the work that the Poel hasn't done yet? I don't really get it. In the case where you say generally, you don't specify a specific vineyard, you just say, like, get me wine. So why should the Poel can respond, like, oh, great. But how does that, why should he then get paid if he hasn't actually completed the work?
Well, because it's like he's thinking that there was there was a hiring to do 10 barrels of wine. The Poel saying, look, I'm still happy to work. I'm happy to go forward with this. You're backing out now and telling me that, like, my job is done. So you're considered, like, to be the chozer. I guess after Aschalas HaMalacha, there's already some sort of kinyan on the schirus. So assuming that the ikuv is from the Baal HaBayis, the Poel will be entitled to his full schar, something along those lines.
So we're assuming that the Baal Bayit is saying, like, I don't want you to continue working.
Yeah, exactly. He already got his barrels of wine, you know, or he's fed up. He's fed up with this worker. He doesn't. This worker has no mazel. He doesn't want him touching any more grapes.
It's not like the assumption is that, like, they can't keep working because, I guess the time has run out. Like, there's
right.
No,
right. That's not like my sense at
like
all,
the,
right.
The wine, like, you know, season is over.
No, right. That's not my sense. Sounds like, you know, Reuven moved on. He found Levi already, and he doesn't want, you know, he doesn't want Shimon touching these grapes anymore.
Okay, it doesn't really appear anywhere, like, in the question, especially if it's written by Truman Session anyways.
Right.
So I guess a big lack. But.
Except that I would say that that's maybe implicit in his interpretation of the Sfina case. So we'll take a look. We'll take a look at that case, and then we'll come back to this paragraph in the Truman Session. All right? All right, good. Anybody else have comments on first of all, Akir, thank you for the really good summary, and thanks for your interpretation of that passage in Shemus Hadeshin. Anybody else have thoughts on Yakir's summary and interpretation? No? All right. So thanks, Yakir. That was really helpful. Zilti's got another hand. Go for it, Zilti.
Yeah, just a question generally. I mean, I was waiting to get anybody to respond to Yakir specific, but just like a general question on Shemus Hadeshin. I don't really get the consistency. Especially with regards to, like, the beginning versus the end. Because the end of the Shemus Hadeshin, he seems to be talking about Mikol Makom Harya Iku Vnisharbo, like what the Poel is responsible in the case where, or Poel is responsible in the case where his wife got sick, and that's why he doesn't get paid for the labor he doesn't perform. So we're effectively, you know, arguing that the model for how we assign payment in case of onus is based on, you know, a little bit of who's to blame for the problem.
Yes, this is Gabe's point, you know, at the
right,
outset.
So how is that consistent, though, with the beginning, where the beginning, or the whole first half, his whole model is nothing to do with that, but a model of, you know, it's at who is it incumbent upon to make it deny.
Okay, really, really nice point. Thanks for fleshing that out. It's an important point to clarify here. So anybody want to address Yoni's concern? Yoni's concern is why at the end is the Shemus Hadeshin suddenly determining liability based off, you know, which party is the cause for not going forward in the agreement, whereas in the beginning the Shemus Hadeshin is thinking in terms of Motzi Mechavero and in terms of the superior knowledge theory and those things. So how do you determine when the last paragraph rule based off where the Ones stems from, when that rule applies, and when the earlier rules of Motzi Mechavero and superior knowledge apply? Anybody want to address Yoni's question? Gabe? Or Yakir? So Yakir, you unmuted yourself.
Yeah, I do want to, but I also wanted to say that it looks like the sentence about Ikum Nisharbo got accidentally deleted from the end of the Truma session.
Oh, did I do that accent? Let me undo my.
I don't know when.
Whoopsies. Let's see. I'll just undo all my.
I'm loath to argue for undoing things because I want my new paragraph break back in.
Here we go. Sorry. There we go. Thanks, Jack. Here.
But yeah, he's appealing to Arayu Kubnisharbo just for the fact of returning the money even if there was prepayment, meaning overriding Motzi Mechavero. I imagine that for the Shemus Hadeshin, and this seems reasonable. I imagine that the set of cases where the Poel has foreknowledge is common upon him to make stipulation is a subset of the set of cases where the onus inheres in him.
It's interesting. Okay, I'm not. Do you think that? So I was wondering if maybe you could say that the cases of superior knowledge and Motzi Mechavero are assuming that the onus is, like, not inhering in either party. So they're like onsim that come me'alma, like, you know, the rain just falls and the river just dries up. Whereas the case of the Poel withdrawing because his wife got sick is considered an ones, that's ba, mi, menu. And so maybe,
yeah.
So I was thinking maybe the way to distinguish is the last paragraph rule applies when there's a clear party in whom the ones inheres. The principle of superior knowledge and amotzi mechavero get applied when there's no clear party in whom the ones inheres. They're like asti me'alma in some third party or in some neutral way. Does that make sense to you back here?
That's also possible.
Yeah.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, cool.
I still don't understand. I think I asked this question on Tuesday and I don't feel as though I understand it any better now. I don't understand the paragraph at issue between you and Yakir. Why?
Wait, Cole. Well, let's come back to that paragraph in 1 second. Let me just make sure we address Yoni's point, and then we'll get to that paragraph. Yoni, did we address, does that answer how we'll distinguish between which rules get applied?
But I think it's like really significant then, because
100%.
But according to Yakir's interpretation, I guess, kind of just like subsumes everything within super knowledge, so it kind of just means consistent. But when you said your interpretation, that kind of means like the whole first half of the Truma Sedation is really just like a minor point, assuming that no one's to blame. But anytime someone is to blame, then that's gonna trump anything else, and that's much more significant.
Yes, I agree. It's a big kiddush if that reading is correct. But that's the sense I get from the Truma Sedation, and it's consistent with the cases in the Gemara. An ayin vav ayin zayin, which really, you know, are cases where the onus is not stemming from any one party.
You know? I think that means that you're in some way turned around on how you feel about this issue, because I think the last time we discussed this, you felt that this wasn't really a sheet that Rishonim, and that, you know, just like based on like Gabe's view in the very beginning, and you felt like this wasn't really so true, and now you're kind of repositioning yourself to follow that really, this is really the main distinction in the sugya.
Aren't you proud of me? I keep such an open mind that, you know, I'm always willing to revisit my commitments. You know, apropos to our discussion last time about people, you know, whose shear stays the same over centuries. Fine, decades. All right, I see. Yair had a hand. Yair, did you want to weigh in on this, or you want to get to, or this is about Cole's point?
So I was going to weigh in on this. I thought I had like perceived a difference between my understanding of the relationship between superior knowledge and the locus of the ones, and your position, but it turns out that they appear to me now to be very similar.
Great, meaning you're pointing out with Yoni that now I've come around.
I wasn't going to make a meta-analysis of Itamar Shiurim of Messiah. I was going to, you know, come back to this discussion of the Truth Sedation.
Yeah, okay, good.
I think the point is well taken.
Yeah, yeah. I think, at least in the Truma Sedation's world, this seems to be the way he establishes the hierarchy between those two principles, right? First, you determine where the ones stems from. If it doesn't stem from anywhere between the parties, it comes from some neutral place, then you go to the superior knowledge / motz mechaver rule. That's the sense you get from the Truma Sedation. So I agree with that reading.
Right. Though there is, at this point, we haven't seen a case where the locus of the ones is within the Baal HaBayis, not within the Poel. It's unclear if the two positions are dominant or
yes.
Is in both each.
You're right, 100%.
Can I express skepticism that I don't see how it's interesting to talk about it's funny, I didn't think about this on Tuesday. The Truma Sedation does distinguish between like, oh, it's like this guy's wife or whatever, you know, so that seems like a Poel specific thing. I don't see why. So imagine a case where I don't see why that should matter, really. So imagine a case where he took the job, but he had a good idea that his wife was going to need him to bail. My intuition is that the worker is more culpable in that case, which is to say that really we don't need to do an analysis of If I'm right about that, it means we don't need to do an analysis about the location of the ones. It's just the case we had was one in which everybody's knowledge was kind of on all fours with everybody else. But if you wiggle the knowledge thing enough, I think you'd be able to override any countervailing intuitions about the importance of the location of the ones. That's my intuition.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything in the in the Gemara, by the way. Like, the Gemaras are about force majeure and knowledge. They're not really about the case the Gemara brings up, I imagine, just because it's like a common case, is one in which, like, somebody has a responsibility that they have to go carry out. But it strikes me that a worker could be negligent with respect to that kind of responsibility, and that we would see very different intuitions halachically if you were.
See, Cole, I agree with you, and that's really what motivates the view that I've been putting forth earlier, that the locus of the ones shouldn't be decisive.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on. I mean, it could be the true. I have no thoughts on the text of the true. Like, I don't trust my my intuitions about what the Trimus Edition thinks, but I do feel as though if we pressed hard enough on the knowledge point, we would cease to care very much about, like, where in the year, which makes a lot of sense, because, like, the which kind of party, you know, the ones affects, that's going to trade on, like, a prior intuition about the importance of various different kinds of onesin. So, for instance, like, I'm on the job and I realize I have tickets to today's Red Sox game. And if, you know, I can't get the tickets refunded, is that an ones? Like, no, that's idiotic. The reason why my wife being sick matters is because wives being sick matter.
right.
It's not because it's like the patur doesn't come from the fact that it's like internal to my life. It's that it's a factor internal to my life that the halacha has decided is a reasonable excuse. But I can be negligent with respect to reasonable excuses.
Yes. Yeah.
That's my thought.
Yeah, I agree with your analysis. I would even put forward the further argument, and this is what I was saying earlier in the semester in the Zman, that the locus of the onus is often a consequence of some normative considerations. So we're not talking about, like, a physical location of an ones, right? The location of the ones is a function of some antecedent normative factor. So, for example, if the poel is considered to be the property of the balabais, the poel getting sick is an ones that is imminent in the balabais's property right. So I think that it's difficult to cut up the world in terms of onsim that flow from the poel and onsim that flow from the balabais, insofar as the balabais acquired some property right in the poel or has some property investment or acquisition in the labor. Onsim that inhere in the labor are really not flowing from the poel, right? They're flowing from the balabais's property, right? So in a lot of cases, this kind of physical location or intuitive location of the ones will be upset by the normative ownership of the labor and the poel, etc. So that's another reason why I was earlier in this Zman skeptical about, you know, this location of the ones work. Yoni, you have a hand?
Yeah, I'll just, I mean, I guess in consonance with that, I'd say that it strikes me that if we say that it's like if we do think that the poel is, you know, owned by the Baal Bayit, so then it and that, you know, would make it, and we do care about where the onus is, like, what location, And it, according to that argument, you should presumably differentiate between who is sick. If there should be a big difference whether or not the Poel is sick, in which case he physically cannot conduct the labor, or he himself is an Avel, versus cases where his wife is sick or his son is sick, in which case he physically still can do the labor, but just, you know, he has to take care of his son, so he has other prior duties.
That seems like another argument against just importing intuitions from like owning inanimate property to employment law.
My point is that if you did really believe of this thing that like onus is based on like locality, where the onus is, you know, where the onus is located, so then you should make a big distinction between who is actually sick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. Let's take Yakir and then Yair.
Yeah, so just in response to what Cole and you were discussing, I think there is a, maybe sharpening what I said earlier, I think there is a minimalist read of this Arikov Nisharbo factor in the Trumas Deshen, that he's only invoking it in cases of equal knowledge, and only for the factor of determining whether or not the Baal HaBayis, forfeited his Hamotzi Mechavero based rights in paying.
So your read is addressing this narrow question of was prepayment acceptance of risk?
Yeah, exactly.
Assumption of risk.
Yeah. And then the Trumas Deshen aligns with your intuitions that the locus of the onus doesn't really matter for anything other than an umdina in the Baal HaBayis's das, and then it's the intuitive locus of the onus, and makes sense to invoke there because we're just trying to do some sort of umdina.
Yeah, I like that. It's very interesting read. So Yakir is suggesting that in this last discussion of Harei Yikuv Nisharbo, Baal HaBayis lo nisratz elim kein shlo yisharbo, that's simply coming to mitigate the earlier statement that prepayment is acceptance of risk. And Yakir is saying, addressing that point, the Trumas HaDeshen contends that prepayment is not an acceptance of risk for onsim that stem from the Poel. Right, Yakir? We lost Yakir. Looks like Ami shut Yakir out of the computer or something, you know? All right, but I think
Yakir Svara. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I hear your reading. I hear the suggestion. I need to think about it a little more. So you're saying this last line.
Talking to Yakir now?
What's that?
Who are you addressing right now?
Yakir.
Oh, he's back. Okay.
Yeah, I'm back.
Sorry, I'm just writing this into my notes here. All right, good. Thanks, Yakir. That's a good point. Excellent. Yair?
I guess I just want to like object a little bit to what I see as a straw man of the locus of the onus view. It's not my perception that when we talk about the locus of the onus, we're referring to the physical location. My understanding of that position is that we're focusing on whether the onus impedes the work's ability to be done or whether it impedes the Poel's ability to do the work. And I think that is the distinction that we're really appealing to.
Locus theory is so bad that even that upgrade isn't persuasive.
And that's fine, but at the very least, we should be knocking down the appropriate straw man and not the inappropriate straw man.
That is gonna, I think, valiant effort. We are still going to, so for instance, there's a Gemara that Itamar, instanced on the Google Doc that talks about the distinction between, somebody who like gives it his all and fails, and somebody who gives it his all, but the but whatever the conditions of the performance of the labor changed, such that like he, in principle, the job wasn't to be done anymore, like delivering medicine to somebody who, you know, became well, or whatever it is. So it'll be, I think we will find it difficult to come up with a principled distinction along the lines of what you just said. What we are going to do is, I imagine, is come up with like what are the things that we for whatever reason, economic, deontic, are willing to hold halakhic, are willing to hold people accountable for in their efforts to execute contracts. But it won't trade on what there won't be some deep distinction between a river flooding a field and my wife getting sick at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion here. And yeah, I do appreciate your attempt to reformulate it and to buttress the...
Do you call it a valiant effort, as Cole suggested?
That's Cole's phrase. But my sympathies here are more in Cole's camp, because an ekov in the Poel's ability to do the work, you might think, is still the Balabais's loss to bear if you view... So if the Balabais owns the Poel...
Right,
then an ekov in the Poel's ability to do the work isn't really the Balabais's ekov. Right?
Correct. It's possible that the factor of whether the Poel is owned by the Balabais will supersede this distinction,
yes,
or render it irrelevant.
Correct.
But if you don't assume that a Poel is owned by the Balabais, then the distinction that I'm invoking, I think, is at least plausible.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I think it's neutral with respect. It's neutral with respect to the ownership question. It just has to do with the assignment of life. Except in the ownership question is going to be, this is all going to just going to be evidence for that. The how we reconstruct the relationship on the basis of these liability assignments. The liability assignment is going to be done independently of that. That the ownership question is going to supervene on, is that a word that's used outside of philosophy classrooms?
It's used in shiurim that are influenced by... analytic philosophy.
Here and where there are Bernard Williams tabs open. Googled. Anyway.
You saw Beryl in the background?
Beryl. He's Jewish, yeah?
I'm not sure. I have to check.
All right.
All right, guys. This is really a good discussion. Let's start our discussion of the... Sugya B'Metzia versus the Sugya in Gittin. Just give me 1 second. I'm going to split the recording in two, since they said we could break up our discussion here. Just give me 1 second. But I think we did a really good job on this Chumash Hadeshan. I don't know if anybody analyzed this Chumash Hadeshan as well as thoroughly as we did here. So hold off 1 second. They say the Rav used to pat himself on the back when he thought he did a good job on a Sugya. He would read the Sugya, and then he would say...
He would do so physically?
I don't think anybody understood this sugya as well as we have here today, or something like that. You know. And then I heard two different reports of that story. So my father tells over that story, to show how the Rav was very proud of the way he learned the sugya. Like no one's learned the sugya as well as we have. And then I heard when I was in MTA, I heard Rav Yitzchak Kohn tell over the same story in a Moser Shmuz. And for him the upshot was that the Rav said no one learned the sugya as well as we have, as opposed to as well as I have. The point being that the Rav saw this year as a collective process.
Whereas father also does. That's why when he said he refers, he speaks in the royal. He speaks in the first
oral. All right, the royal. Right, the royal. All right, good. Let me see. Let me just flip the recording here. Let's see. Yes.
The recording has stopped.
Excellent. Now I could do a separate one, I think. Just give me 1 second.
Stop the recording after the gossip.
Well, I wanted to get the two interpretations.
I wanted to get it on the record.
That's right.